Today is May 28th, 2014, and this is episode number 256 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, untrained orangutan. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com, and you can send your bananas directly to me.
Oh, I thought that your training had been going so well. Do we need to put the newspapers back on the floor?
Well, it's probably a good idea, really.
Yeah. It's, well, you know, I guess it's kind of a way of life, so embrace your orangutan-ness.
Yeah, all right. Fair enough. Now, I was thinking of that because I was with a friend who was driving the other day, and he parked poorly, and I commented that it was quite all right because I knew several untrained orangutans who would have done a worse job parking than he did.
And now I have this image of a cut scene. I'm assuming a cut scene from Any Which Way But Loose, where everyone's like, "You think the orangutan can park better? All right," and they let him.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. So it's funny, you and I were getting ready to prepare, we were preparing this very show when Apple let loose the news we've all been waiting for.
The news we've all been waiting for. What could that possibly be? Yeah, well, wait, give me a beat here. Yeah. The thing that bugs me is that once again, Apple failed to consult with us for our schedule.
I know.
But how are we supposed to plan our shows?
I know. It's so inconsiderate. Rude. So yeah. Like Tim doesn't have my number.
Oh, I'm sure he has all of our numbers.
Yeah. It's true. That part is true. So let's see here. The big news that was announced today, finally, was the acquisition of Beats.
Mere moments ago.
We just got our coverage up and went back to preparing the show. Apple bought the company for $3 billion, which is $200 million less than was originally floated.
Right, so it's $2.6 billion plus $400 million in, I forgot what the $400 million was.
That will vest over time.
Oh, right.
The amount of time was not specified in this announcement. And it's probably a cash deal, more than likely a cash deal, but they also didn't specify that. Apple does have plenty of cash, so there's no reason for them to use stock for this sort of thing.
Right. And now I have this image in my head of Tim standing there, and he's got Phil beside him and Eddie Q. And Tim says, "So how much for the company?" And Jimmy Iovine goes, $5 million. And Tim goes, $2 million. Jimmy comes back and says, $3 million. And Tim goes, "Okay." And then he turns to Phil and he goes, "Pay the man." And Phil pulls out his wallet and starts pulling out $100 bills and then pays him on the spot. Because I'm assuming Apple has that kind of money in Phil Schiller's pocket.
Yeah, probably. But it's billion. It was $3 billion.
I never specified how big Phil's pocket is.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. He'd still be counting. He'd be counting for a long time.
Probably. But I could see him getting up all the way to the end and like, "Oh, crap, I'm 300 short. Eddie?" And he's like, "God, I always have to bail you out." And pulls out $300. And I have a really twisted view on how things happen at Apple, don't I?
This is like really weird.
Yeah. But the crazy thing is, it's probably exactly true.
No, it's not at all true. That's not how. That's. No.
Great. Ruin the illusion for everyone, Brian. I hope you're happy.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm kind of sad, really. Anyway, so $3 billion. They bought both Beats Music and Beats Electronics. Beats Music is the name of the entity that operates the Beats Music streaming service. Mm-hmm. And Beats Electronics is the name of the entity that sells the headphones that I've been bagging on for years.
That's true. Beats Music is only months old, really.
It really is only months old. Probably was not a big chunk of that valuation.
Probably not. I'm sure the headphones and speaker business was the bigger chunk. And I've noticed for quite a while now, but I'm really aware of it now, that when I'm out running or walking, I see two color headphone cables, typically white and red, which means I'm seeing people with their Apple earbuds.
Yep. Yep.
And people with their Beats earbuds.
Yep.
Because their cords are red.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And then all the other colors after that.
Yep. 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 Yeah. What about it?
Just, if Apple was going to buy a company based on market share.
Yeah. Well, Beats definitely has a big chunk of the, certainly of the over the ear market. I can only assume they also have a reasonable share of the in-ear market. They sell a lot of headphones, and those headphones are very profitable because their markup is pretty substantial. They're operating at the high end of the market, for good or for ill. And it remains to be seen. So one of the things that we don't know is how. So I believe that Kelly Gaumont is writing up for us right now a piece.
This is how the sausage is made, people.
Yes, exactly. She's writing up a piece for us as Jeff and I are speaking about a letter that Tim Cook sent out to employees. And that letter said that Beats Music would, that Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre are joining the team under Eddie Q, as well as the rest of their staff. And that Beats Electronics would report to Phil Schiller, which is interesting because
you would think that they would have that division reporting to someone that's in charge of hardware and not marketing,
or even operations or something. Because Phil is sales and marketing. That's what Phil Schiller does at Apple, and so now he's going to have. Maybe it's because they're going to continue to make headphones on their own auspices, but Phil Schiller will be handling be ultimately responsible for the sales and marketing of those devices. So
now that's like saying that the people that make the iMac or develop the iMac in house report to Phil instead of Johnny Ive.
Well, not exactly.
I find it very weird.
It is weird, but if you think, if they're going to run Beats Electronics as a standalone company, that's when that would start to make more sense.
It should be an operations guy, not the marketing guy. But
yeah, or hardware. Yeah, yeah. So that's still a bit perplexing, but this is what the letter from Tim Cook to employees said. It's a. By the way, so there's a picture that went along with that.
Yeah,
and it's Tim Cook, and Jimmy Iovine, and Dr. Dre, and Eddie Q.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim Cook's looking pretty buff,
and Eddie's looking like he's getting into better shape.
Svelte. He's looking svelte.
Svelte. He's looking svelte.
He's looking. Svelte, and I'm wondering if this is because he decided to get fit, and that Tim decided to get even more fit, because Tim has always been seemingly fit from from what we could see, but he's looking buff now. He actually boy's got a chest on him, and I'm wondering if this is because they've been working with their own iWatch product.
I hope that's exactly what's happened. That would just please me to no end. And then when they get on stage to do their big iWatch announcement, and they say, well, you know, you might question just how well a product like this could work. We've never been in this market before. Well, look at us. We're already using it.
That's when the tearaway clothes.
That's exactly what I was saying. The tearaway clothes. And it's like, damn, six-pack, man. And...
Apple executive team comes out, you know, doing some male stripper dances moves.
It's intriguing and creepy at the same time.
Yeah, it's freaking awful, but it's funny. Yeah, so I guess so. All right, so the questions that have been answered are, yes, this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We now have a price tag, $3 billion, a little bit less than $3.2 billion that was floated. It's a valuation that makes sense simply because all that headphone business is worth money. And yes, that, as I've been saying all along, that whether or not Apple needs it, Apple has to pay for it if Apple's going to get it. I'm looking at you, John Martellaro.
I shouldn't laugh. I'll only encourage you.
We don't know if Beats Music is going to be operated as Beats Music as a standalone service, or if it's going to be branded as an iTunes service. We don't know that yet. Although we do know, so Beats, the Beats Music app today, absolutely and positively is a direct product of this purchase. The subscription price for Beats Music on iOS dropped from $119.88 down to $99.99.
And that's for a full year of service.
That's for a full year of service. A month will cost you $9.99. You can get a 2-week trial for 14 days. It used to be only 7 days, but they bumped that up to 14 days. Now, Beats Music doesn't have a lot of customers. By definition, that means that most of the people that are listening to us don't know what Beats Music is all about.
Right. Or they've heard of it and they just aren't interested.
Right. If you were curious, now you can find out and you can spend 2 weeks doing so. So Beats Music is curated, and that's actually one of the things that that Tim Cook talked about in his letter, and one of the things that they mentioned in the press release, the importance of a curated streaming service. As a matter of fact, they said that they felt that Beats Music was the first streaming service to get it right. Of course, you know, what else are they going to say? And
good point.
But to that end, Beats Music does do things differently than Spotify, certainly than Pandora. It's not really a Pandora competitor. iTunes Radio is a Pandora competitor. And one of their big claims to fame is being able to stream music to select music via an algorithm based on your mood, where you answer some questions about how you're feeling, and then they play music that will supposedly match that mood. That's one of their claims to fame. If you're interested in how that works, you can now try it out for free. The app is a free download, and you can do a 14-day free trial.
I just had a thought that to me sounds incredibly awesome, which is, Apple releases the iWatch with all its health and fitness tracking features in it, and it can use the data that it's collecting to figure out what your mood is.
Hmm.
And then based on that, it automatically updates what it is that you're listening to through Beats Music. So it's just automatically playing the appropriate kind of music for your mood.
Yeah, that'd be years out.
Nonetheless, just the idea. But
it could certainly happen. It will have that sort of thing. Absolutely will happen. Whether or not it's Apple that does it first, that sort of thing is coming. But I imagine that Apple could do it better than anybody else.
Yeah, I would just love to get near my computer, and the whole proximity sensor thing knows that I'm here, and iTunes just starts playing whatever the appropriate Beats mix is for me.
Right, Beats Music Mix. Right. So the other things we don't know are whether or not Beats Electronics is going to be maintained separately. We do know that they're going to be ultimately reporting to Phil Schiller, as we just discussed. But we don't know if they're going to be a standalone company operating outside of the direct Apple culture.
I hate when I forget names. FileMaker, sort of like FileMaker does.
Sort of like File. Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. I have no idea how any of that would work. Apple's never done an acquisition like this. This is, you know, and so not only of this size, right? The previous most expensive acquisition they did was Next back in 97 of $400 million.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a $3 billion acquisition. So orders of magnitude bigger than any of the companies that they normally buy. And they've never bought an existing product line. So we don't know.
Not like this.
We don't know how this is going to. Yeah, right, right. We discussed how they bought Final Cut Pro and they bought Logic. But both of those products were taken and integrated within Apple. And in the case of Final Cut Pro, it wasn't even finished when they bought it. And in the case of Logic, it was certainly a finished product. But basically, Apple took that team, into the company, incorporated it, and then redesigned it and released it. But they've never. This is Beats Electronics is a different kind of company to buy.
Oh, very much so.
And so we don't yet know how that's going to shape out, and Apple hasn't given us any color on that in today's announcement.
And I'm guessing that there are a lot of people in the entertainment industry right now that are sitting back thinking, we don't even know where to start to prepare for whatever it is that Apple has next, because we no longer have a clue where they're going.
Right.
Which is probably a pretty scary thing for these people, because Apple has a nice track record of moving into markets and doing the huge disruption thing, especially in the entertainment industry.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm curious to see exactly how all these pieces do end up fitting together, because we do have... This is a totally new thing, just all the way around. And I'm curious, are we going to end up with Beats by Apple headphones?
Yeah, but
you made the joke question about Beats by Dre by Apple, yeah, Beats or via Apple.
Beats by Dre via Apple. Either way, it's funny. All right, folks, here's some more sausage. I'm actually helping with the title.
See, this really is sausage. Not only are we recording a show, but at the same time, we're helping our other editors with their articles that need to be up, like, right now. And, yeah, there you go. It's like you guys are sitting here in the studio with us, which would probably be a lot more fun than having Sausage and Albiba. No, what are our interns' names?
Sierra.
Sebulba.
Sierra and Ainsley. Sarah and Ainsley. Sorry, guys.
That's right. Sebulba and Annis. Having them in the studio just isn't as much fun as having you guys in here with
exactly.
us.
Exactly. Exactly. All right.
Why
so,
do the interns always look
so,
at me like that?
So I guess we have... because you're mean.
I know. I'm horribly mean. I should be spanked. I just changed the demographic for our show just like that.
You did. You did, in fact.
So, anyhow, back to Beats.
Back to Beats. So we still have unanswered questions. I guess that's our point. We have unanswered questions, and we have but we have some questions that have been answered.
Right. And the big question is, will Apple actually buy Beats? And the answer is yes.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we can absolutely expect them to be part of the WWDC event on Monday.
I think that today's announcement timing was twofold. First, it gives Apple the setup that they need for more things that will be announced on Monday at the WWDC keynote.
Yep.
And yes, we will be doing our live coverage and analysis, so stick with us on Monday for that. The other thing is, today was the day that Samsung was announcing their new health and fitness tracking products.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you said that wrong. Today was the day that Samsung was announcing their LOL health and fitness project.
Yeah.
Oh, I kid. Samsung, except that I don't. I think you're a joke.
So, yeah. Anyhow, so that joke, that announcement was happening this afternoon. And right about the time, I think, that it was wrapping up. I'm not exactly sure on the timing, but I think right about the time it was wrapping up, Apple dropped their press release that they were buying Beats. So Samsung went through all that trouble and expense to have all these reporters that...
Ignore them.
Yeah. Yeah. Apple did one little press release and totally just tromped all over Samsung's PR.
Which is, you know, funny because Samsung announced something this week in an effort to beat Apple to the punch. But not that... I don't think Apple's going to be announcing anything at WWDC about the iWatch anyway.
I would be very surprised.
But we do, you know, so I guess this is a fine transition because we do have... the report that came from the Financial Times, is that right? On Monday?
Yes.
Memorial Day here in the States, Monday in the UK where the Financial Times is located, saying that Apple was going to be announcing a major home automation platform at WWDC.
Yes, and I'm actually really excited about that. I hope it's true.
So on Tuesday, when that news was largely being disseminated here in the States, there was an announcement from Apple that it would be taking the somewhat, not unprecedented, but highly unusual move of streaming the WWDC keynote live.
Which they've done before. The big thing, which Dave pointed out this morning when we recorded... TMO Daily Observations, it's the lead time they gave us that makes this so interesting.
So Apple has streamed media events before, but I don't think Apple has ever streamed a WWDC event.
And off the top of my head, I'm not sure. But even still, giving us this much warning...
Yeah, it's usually a matter of hours at best for how much... how much notice they gave us. They gave us lots of notice to make sure that lots of people can plan on watching it. And to me, that says that Apple is going to be doing something that's going to have a wide consumer interest.
I agree. I think that's exactly what's happening. And they want to have as many eyes as possible watching, even though there's all the sites out there that, like us, that will be giving real-time coverage.
Right.
They want to make it very easy for people to put eyeballs on the event.
Right. And that, but so this announcement from Apple to me lends a lot of credence to the idea that Apple is going to be doing something important, like, for instance, a major home automation initiative. And the Financial Times has a very good track record with stuff. They broke the Beat story, too.
They did. That's right.
The Financial Times is a real newspaper with real reporters and real editors, and they do a very good job in general with their reporting. And I imagine that this story is accurate.
I have a feeling it is, and I'm hoping it is because I really love the idea of having a unified home automation system, meaning I can take components from various manufacturers and have them all work together. Because right now, you can get part of what you want from one company, part of what you want from another company. Let's say you want to have the different devices powered at different times. Okay, so now you're looking at maybe like Wemo from Belkin. Mm-hmm. But then you want to have total control over your light bulbs, including the colors that they're spreading, illuminating.
I could have come to your rescue.
But you really wanted to see where I was going to go with that, didn't you?
I really did. I kind of took a page from your book on that. That's okay. Anyway, Philips Hue.
Yeah. So you have all these different things. And then if you start adding in appliances and things like a Nest thermostat, you now have all these different apps for controlling all the different things, and not everything can talk to each other. And yes, you can use services like If This Then That to trigger different things and make systems work together. But man, what if I had a single unified system where I could just have the one app on my iPhone and control everything that I have, regardless of which company it comes from, and have it all talk together?
Yes, and for once, well, not for once, but this would be an example that's not necessarily very common for Apple to actually launch it as a platform accessible to other people and other developers and other hardware makers.
This is a place where launching as a platform, I think, is really smart.
Yeah, it makes a lot more sense.
But they're kind of doing that with CarPlay.
They are doing, well, yeah, because Apple can't make all the cars.
That's true.
And Apple doesn't need to make car stereos.
Right. So, and they don't need to make the toaster fridges.
Yes, but they could make toaster fridges. But that's different than not making the cars, because they're probably not going to, I'm looking at you, Google, they're probably not going to necessarily be able to unseat all the car makers and you know, yeah, not even if they bought Tesla, which everyone seems to want them to do.
I don't want them to do that, but I'm not everyone.
Fair enough. And the thing I want to talk about on this is, like, the way the Financial Times reported it was that Apple was launching this platform in the wake of Google's purchase of Nest.
I think that was a horrible way for them to couch this story.
I wouldn't call it horrible. I think it's actually, it's thinking inside the box, but I think it's reasonable thinking inside the box, because it technically is accurate. If Apple announces this on Monday, it will be in the wake of Google purchasing Nest Labs in January for $3.2 billion. There's that number again.
Right, but they're making, what they're doing is creating,
they're making it seem like Apple is being the reactionary force here.
Right. And they're doing that intentionally.
I don't know. I actually ascribe, I'm going to put this to inside the box thinking before I'll ascribe it to malice. Nonetheless, the first thing that I thought of was recasting Google's purchase in a different light. And that was, what if Google knew that Apple was working on this initiative, highly likely here in Silicon Valley, and especially if Apple's been working on it for a year or two or three, which is likely the case, and if Google knew about that, and they bought Nest as a defensive play rather than a proactive reaching out into a new market.
And that's something I could absolutely see happening.
Yeah, if and I do think it's the case, because the chances, so it is certainly possible that great minds think alike. And Larry Page certainly has a great mind, whether or not I care for some of the choices he makes with that mind. He certainly has a great mind. Apple's folks are clearly smart. They could all, it doesn't take actually, one of the things I pointed out in a piece I wrote this week was that Google, of all people on the planet, of all corporate entities on the planet, is in the best position to know if there is an increasing interest in home automation.
Yes, because they have all the data for people that are looking for home automation products.
Right. And so they're in a fantastic place to take information like that and predict trends that are coming. And it's very possible that Google said, you know, home automation is going to be a big deal. Let's buy Nest. And it just turned out that Apple has also been working on a big home automation platform under iOS for, you know, probably years. And that everything is all coincidental. That's very possible. It's also possible that Apple turned on a dime in January and said, oh my God, Google has bought Nest. We should have bought Nest. Home automation is going to be a very big deal. We better like whip up something real quick and announce it as soon as possible. That's possible.
It's possible. I don't think that's as likely, though. I think it might be a combination of things. meaning Apple's been working on this for quite a while, and Google's been thinking, you know, maybe this is a market that we need to start looking at more. Then they hear that that Apple is working on this, and they have positive proof, and they're like, oh, crap, we need to move right away, or we're going to be screwed. And so they jump on Nest. Which so I'm kind of taking the various scenarios that, that you came up with and mashing them together into a unified hypothesis.
Well, okay, and that's fair enough, because it is likely that, that Google, like I said, Google is probably aware before anyone else that home automation is going to be important, and when it was going to be important, you know, Eric Schmidt said that he knows, well, the Google knows what we're thinking before we do. But I do believe that it is most likely that Apple has been working on this, and that Google, seeing the handwriting on the wall, wanted to position itself either as a competitor and build its own platform based on Android, using Nest as the core of this new platform. Or what I would much prefer is that Google knew that Apple was going to come into this space, was going to open it up like Apple always opens up existing markets once it enters, and wants to have a piece of that market by selling devices that play within Apple's ecosystem. In other words, having Nest devices be certified to work with an Apple system and make money that way. And also,
sure,
and
I can totally see that.
And collect data on us in the process.
Yeah, because of course, why would Google not want to collect data? And I'm not saying that in a kind of a jerky way, but as part of the business model, of course, they would want.
Yeah, to they keep data. Insisting that they're not. That the agreement with Nest on the purchase agreement with Nest and said that the customer data would remain private. I just, for some reason, don't have any trust in that.
I'm having a hard time trusting in that too.
So the real question is this: will Nest be a participant in Apple's platform, and Nest devices are still sold in the Apple stores, or is Nest going to form the basis of a competitor to whatever Apple's going to announce on Monday? Those are the big questions there.
And we won't know on Monday. Well, we could know on Monday if Apple announces that Nest is a partner in this new platform. Well, then we know right there.
Yeah. If Tony Fadell comes up on stage.
And if we don't hear anything on Monday, that doesn't mean they're not. It just means we don't know yet.
Correct. Yeah. It kind of depends on if Apple actually invited Google to be one of its member partners on this platform.
And that's possible.
It does seem possible. It's kind of hard to wrap considering
Tim Cook's statements regarding Samsung at one point where he said that he'd prefer not to have to litigate things.
Yeah.
I could see I could see this as an olive leaf, olive branch sort of offering, where Apple says, "Hey, look, let's work together on this, because we know if we don't, that ultimately we're going to end up fighting in court. So why don't we just kind of preempt that and find a way to be friends on this one?"
Yeah, maybe. With Samsung? Samsung is burning its bridges with Apple. Yeah, you said with Samsung Google. Though.
I meant Google.
Fair enough.
And it's kind of funny that that I would drop Samsung's name when I meant Google.
Also fair enough. All right, so home automation, WWDC, going to be a big deal. Beats is clearly going to play a role in that event. You know, we're going to get some kind of introduction from these guys, possibly even some additional color on how these products and services are going to be integrated into Apple. I would assume that's why we didn't get more color today, because we're going to get it on Monday.
That makes sense.
And I'm down with the Financial Times report on a home automation platform. So that's all.
I think Monday's going to be very exciting.
It's going to be an exciting day. It's going to be an exciting day. Hey, do you remember when we were talking about William Wyndham and Star Trek?
Which time? Yes, I do.
The most recent time.
Yeah, I do remember.
And we were joking around about his role in the Doomsday Machine.
Yes.
And we got a fantastic letter. Just a fantastic letter from a gentleman named Bill Nation.
And it really is a fantastic letter. It was so cool.
He had been listening to the podcast and heard us talking about William Wyndham and hadn't realized that Mr. Wyndham did an episode of Star Trek, because he knew William Wyndham through some research he had done on his uncle's parachute infantry regiment in World War II, the 508. And apparently Mr. Wyndham was a member of the 508. He was a paratrooper, essentially, in World War II.
A parachute wearer guy, yes. A paratrooper.
we're clearly military guys. Who saw service in World War II, and he was also in To Kill a Mockingbird. Actually, he had a great, Mr. Nation had a great little anecdote. He said, when I asked him about To Kill a Mockingbird, William Wyndham said, "Yeah, that was a pretty good flick," which is...
It's just awesome.
Very understated, very funny. And anyway, it was just a great letter to get, and I didn't know any of that about Mr. Wyndham, and it was terrific to get to hear about it. And I wanted to thank Mr. Bill Nation for telling us about it.
Yes, thank you. That was just a really awesome story.
Yeah, it really was. Really was. And we also got a lot of feedback last week from we were asking people what their thoughts were on Google. And not surprisingly, that feedback was kind of ran the gamut.
That's what I do.
Oh, I see what I accidentally did there. We had a couple people saying that, you know, look, this is just advertising. You can't escape it. Deal with it. Live with it. And other people, actually, Mel Buckpit tweeted a couple of what I thought were really, really well stated and succinct lines. He said, "What an awful vision of the future in Google's SEC filing. An arrogant company with no sense of what it is to be human." And then he said, "Every person, every thought, every action is an asset to be mined and exploited by selling access to you in your life."
Have a great day.
Well said. And yes, it is pretty horrific. And
yes, it is.
And then Alex Santos, he mentioned that he uses DuckDuckGo because he doesn't want to use Google.
And for those of you that don't know what DuckDuckGo is, it's a online search tool, much like Google and Bing, but it doesn't track your search activity.
Yeah, they pledge not to track your search activity. So it's the ads, the one ad, at least that I've seen so far, that is displayed is based solely upon the actual search you have made.
Yes, that's exactly the experience I've had too.
Right. And I will say, though, that when I did a vanity search, because it's all about me, that on DuckDuckGo, I was very outraged that they found a bunch of fake Brian Chaffins above me, the Brian Chaffin. Whereas Google has got it right. Almost all of the Brian Chaffin searches on Google are all about me, the real Brian Chaffin.
And see, and that's so interesting, because when I did my vanity search on DuckDuckGo,
for testing purposes. Of course.
It brought up a bunch of links that were for me, but the order that they brought them in, I found to be just fascinating. It was things that were more obscure were ranked higher than say articles that I've written at TMO.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when I looked at the photographs, it found 33 photos of me on the internet, 22 of which were not me.
More of the photographs they found of me were actually of me, and all of the first, I don't know, 7 or 8 were me, the real Brian Chaffin.
Yeah, the first was definitely not me. And when I compare that to Google, I end up with pages and pages of links that are accurate for me.
Right. What I don't get about that, though, is how come the links about you aren't actually about me? Because isn't it all about me?
It is. And clearly there's a problem with the search algorithms. Because if you type Jeff Gamet into Google or into DuckDuckGo, aren't you supposed to see content about Brian Chaffin?
Oh, I know what it is. It's because you work for me. So it's all right, sweet.
Dodged that bullet.
Boy, howdy, that was a close call there.
Yeah, man, I was really worried for your ego.
Exactly. So that was Alex's take on things. Nick Betcher, who has given us lots of feedback, and we appreciate that very much. He basically says, ain't nothing to worry about. Got to disagree with you there, sir.
I'm concerned.
Yeah, I don't want to be the product.
Yeah, I'm not concerned in the sense that I'm losing sleep. Okay, I pretty much don't sleep, but I'm not losing sleep over this.
Yeah, fair enough. How about Amazon? Are you losing sleep over Amazon?
Sometimes.
You see what I did there?
I see what you did there. You actually, holy crap, you did a segue that works.
I did a segue that makes sense. Oh no, I am slipping in my old age. So Amazon released a statement about the controversy over their negotiation tactics with Hachette. Have we discussed this on the show?
No, we've discussed it a little bit on Daily Observations. On
Daily Observations, right? And I get confused. Which, by the way, you know, actually, let's take a brief moment. So, our Daily Observations podcast.
Yeah, have we not talked about that yet?
We haven't really talked about it here.
Okay, to be fair, the show's only a week old.
It's only a week and a couple days old. Mm-hmm. And Jeff it's a new podcast that Jeff is running, where he has other people from TMO staff on to have very short conversations about topics. So, like, you know how we ramble on?
We do.
Yeah, we do. We kind of go on a bit. Sometimes we dig deep, and sometimes we dig ourselves a hole. And but this is a much tighter show. It's about 15 minutes is the goal, right?
Yeah.
And it's basically whatever the topical topics are of the day. Either stuff that we're about to write about or stuff that we just did write about. And it came out of our morning meetings that we have.
Yeah, there's so many interesting things that we talk about in our morning meetings that would be great to share with people. But there's all the other stuff that happens that would just bore people.
Yeah, like, you know, pants coming off and off-color jokes and things like that that we can't really share in the form of a podcast or a podcast. And anyway, so it's a slightly different, it's a much different format from the Apple Context Machine. But since we are talking about stuff almost every day, sometimes things do get confusing. So this Amazon and Hachette deal, I'll give you the really short version of it. Amazon has been accused of using bullying tactics to force Hachette to give it better terms on ebooks. Those bullying tactics include removing pre-order options for upcoming Hachette titles, something that Amazon pioneered for books. And that's the most recent step they've done. But they've been saying that it'll take weeks to deliver books that are supposedly in stock. They stopped discounting Hachette titles as much as they're discounting other titles, and in some cases, not at all. And they were using banners to try to direct readers to, so like you're on a book by an author that's published by Hachette, and there would be a banner recommending that you buy other books instead. And then also removing some like there was one book that was there was no, the hardcover page had no buy option, the paperback page had no buy option, the there was simply no Kindle entry, and but there was an entry for a $61 audio CD or audio file.
Holy crap!
Which is, you know, an undiscounted version of the audio of the audiobook. And this is all a, quite frankly, a campaign of intimidation to hurt Hachette sales, and to get, actually it was theorized that Amazon was hoping that Hachette's authors would rise up and demand that Hachette accept Apple's, Amazon's terms. There I go again. Accept Amazon's terms. And the reason why I call this bullying is because Amazon is able, this could be an effective strategy by Amazon because it has near monopoly power, if not outright monopoly power, in the book and ebook markets.
Right.
63% of all books that are sold by Amazon, and it's a higher percentage if you're looking at just ebooks. And this is this near monopoly power or outright monopoly power was effectively given the okay by the DOJ when the DOJ went after Apple for supposedly being the ringleader of a conspiracy to raise prices in ebooks, rather than going after the company that actually had monopoly power and was using dumping practices to keep out the competition in the ebook market.
Now, wasn't it the DOJ that said that Apple was abusing its position in this market?
No, the DOJ said that Apple was organized a conspiracy amongst publishers to raise prices. And
See what I did, how I set you up there.
Thank
so you could
thank you
go
very
into
much.
That.
It definitely wasn't, they weren't accusing, I mean, Apple had no market share. Apple had no monopoly power. At the time, Amazon had either 80 or 90%, depending on who you ask, of the ebook market. And Apple not wanting to compete on price and seeing the destructive nature of what Amazon was doing in the book market, which is destroying all perceived value, used its outstanding negotiating tactics to get the publishers to do what they already wanted to do, which was move to an agency model where they set the price and the retailer takes a percentage. And that's what the DOJ was fussing about. And the problem is that there was no competition in the ebook market because you can't compete when you've got a giant like Amazon willing to lose money on each bestseller sold in order to gain market share. There's no incentive and oftentimes no ability for any other competitors to come in.
Right. And so then we end up with, in this case, Apple and the publishers coming up with a new system that they wanted to use. And getting accused of antitrust violations,
whereas the company with the actual monopoly power in that industry basically has the DOJ dancing to its tunes.
Right. Yeah. So Amazon ends up getting, in for all intents and purposes, an endorsement from the Department of Justice and the federal court system to operate in pretty much whatever fashion it wants to control.
And then surprise, surprise, a year and a few months later, yeah, they're basically using, not basically, they're using these intimidation tactics to artificially hurt, you know, it'd be one thing if they pulled, if they just stopped carrying Hachette books. They said, okay, fine. Our deal, our distribution deal is gone. So, we're no longer going to, we're no longer going to carry your books at all. That'd be one thing. That actually to me would be pretty darn legitimate. Because when people want to go look for a book, they wouldn't find it. So they might go to other places and look for the book. But by doing all these shenanigans where they say it's going to take weeks to deliver a book that's in stock, people find the book, but they're being encouraged to go buy other books instead. And they're making Hachette books, you know, look more expensive. I mean, it's just, it's my problem with this stuff in a theoretically free market, which we don't really have, but whatever, is that Amazon's monopoly power makes these actions unfair.
Right. And it seems that there's little recourse for the publishers. Because where else are they going to go to sell their books? And I found it.
Well, they're going to go to the other competitors, Barnes & Noble, / Nook, and Apple, and the independents that are out there.
Right, but they don't get the market share for potential sales that they get through Amazon. And correct. So when I read Amazon's letter, and they said, look, they can go anywhere else and sell their books. We're not going to stop them from doing that. And they're welcome to do that. That's absolutely true. But when that means that you lose the market share or the lion's share of your sales, that doesn't seem like it's much of an option for a publisher.
Right. It doesn't seem like it's much of an option. And the letter that Jeff is referring to is a very unusual statement. You know, Amazon, more than any company besides Apple, has thrived by not commenting on things about the company when people have questions. Did I say that right?
I had to parse it in my head, but yes, you did.
So, you know, Apple is definitely known for not bothering to comment on questions from the press. Amazon has done much of the same thing, not bothering to comment on a lot of things. And here we had a situation where Amazon released a fairly lengthy statement. It was a lengthy statement for corporate statements, where they not only owned up to some of the tactics that they're employing, but defended them as proper negotiation tactics for them to get the best price they can for their readers, for their customers. And then also saying that, you know, this coverage is, you know, there's been a lot of coverage on this and it's all unfair because it's skewed against us and it's not very balanced.
And I found that just to be so just, I can't even come up with the word that I want to use. So I'll say, so wow.
Yeah, a lot of it's pretty wow. Much indeed. Much crazy.
Much crazy, such wow.
Such wow. So it's interesting because it seems like, so what's happened is that a lot of authors, including authors that are both published by Hachette and other authors, like one of my favorite new authors, Jay Kristoff, who wrote this expletive-filled rant about Amazon. He's not published by Hachette. He's published by Macmillan, I think it is. And but authors like him and lots of other authors have all come out against what Amazon is doing because they're not stupid. They realize that it's Hachette's authors that are in the crosshairs today. It'll be them tomorrow if Amazon wins this little fight.
Oh, absolutely.
And this little fight is to get better terms on ebooks, and those better terms might possibly be used to give customers better prices, or Amazon may finally be trying to actually eke out a small profit from its book sales. You know, either way, it's ultimately not, in my opinion, not good for the publishing industry because it'll mean ever less edited books.
Of course. And ultimately, it means less money for publishers and authors. And it means that the books that we do get, there will be fewer of the quality books.
Yeah, and that's my big thing about this. I'm a little bit less interested in the well-being of the publishers. They are large, multi-billion-dollar companies. The big five at this point are large multi-billion dollar corporations, often owned by larger multi-billionaire, multi-year billion.
We're really good dollars. With words, aren't we?
We are. I'm a little bit less concerned with them. And you know, James Patterson, who was a Hachette author who wrote, I think, 13 books in one series last year, thanks to the help of co-authors who actually did the writing. I mean, anyway, the point is that my main concern is, as a reader, I love high quality books. High quality books require not only a great author who has the time to write, because it takes a lot of time, folks, but it also takes great editors who can guide the story when needed, great copy and line editors who can fix the mistakes that inevitably make it into any manuscript, and even to a certain extent, great marketers and great cover artists. You know, like, these things require healthy margins. Just like Apple's products are made possible by healthy margins. Look at the computer industry before Apple changed the rules with the iMac. Had less and less research being done. You know, as all the margins got squeezed out by companies like Dell, who were in this race to the bottom, and companies like HP and Compaq trying to follow in Dell's footsteps, companies like eMachines, companies like Gateway, who tried and failed to follow in Dell's footsteps, because Dell was out toastering everybody, as I like to call it. What was happening is that no one was doing any research and development in the computer industry except for Intel, Microsoft, and Apple. And the result was computers that became less and less interesting and less capable. You know, who knows where computers would be right now if Dell hadn't been so good at eliminating all profits in this industry. Who knows?
It would definitely be a different market than it is today.
It'd absolutely be a different market. And, you can look at any industry you want. When profits get eliminated from that industry, the quality of the products in that market go downhill. I don't want that to happen with books. It's not that I want to perpetuate necessarily the status quo. It's not that I think that the big five publishers are all, you know, made out of dandelions and rainbows. You know, there's a lot of problems with the publishing industry, but eliminating profits in the way that Amazon has been doing is going to ultimately result in me having less good books to read. And not to mention the fact that I'm an aspiring author who...
Right. So you have a vested interest in this.
I do have two vested interests.
Because,
yeah, as readers,
yes.
And in my case, as an aspiring fiction author.
And it matters.
This stuff does matter. I want great books. I can't have great books if all the profits are thrown away. I can't have great books if Amazon ends up being basically the de facto publisher and de facto retailer of all books. And that's kind of the path that we're headed on, thanks to the DOJ.
And that's actually really sad.
Yeah. And all this conversation was brought about by the late last night. Amazon released this statement that, again, was highly unusual. And it seems like maybe they're feeling the pressure coming from, in particular, all the authors. I know that a lot of our readers have echoed, you know, have been supportive of my take on things and said that they would order elsewhere. And this is where I have to mention the fact that we participate in the Amazon affiliate program at the Mac Observer.
We do.
And I buy, so I don't buy any books from Amazon, but the last thing I ordered from Amazon, the last book I ordered from Amazon was the fifth book in the Game of Thrones, A Dance of Dragons. And I got the UK version and the US version so I could have first editions of both. And then I read it on my iPad with the iBooks.
Of course.
Yeah, definitely.
And I have bought physical books from Amazon on several occasions.
I don't buy many books from Amazon at all anymore, but I do buy some other things from Amazon. It's not like this is a black and white issue. I don't even know if there's necessarily a good guy and a bad guy here, but I don't like these tactics being used against a publisher when Amazon has got the monopoly power, the market power that they do have, I think that it's wrong. I think that it's unfair. And ultimately, it's authors who are being hurt. Authors and the publisher.
Yeah, it is. And
the publisher will survive. The authors won't.
Right. Which then hurts the consumers, because now we have fewer books coming out that are of quality content.
Yeah. You know, authors, it's hard enough for an author to make a living as an author. You know, almost all authors have day jobs. And, you know, what we're seeing right now in the book industry is we're actually seeing some stratification. We're seeing established authors can pretty much continue to release books. Established authors can get much better terms, right? Established authors can, like J.K. Rowling, can go to selling all the ebooks herself, right?
That's true.
And make a lot of money. But a new author can't do that. A new author can't say, I'm going to be the only person that sells my ebooks. No one's going to buy it. No one's ever going to see it.
No, and their friends so will see it, but that's about it.
We're seeing the stratification where there's less and less money being devoted to developing new authors and to nurturing them and actually training them to be great authors. And we will eventually feel that as readers. Yeah, do you remember when books used to be great?
And
yeah, and
we'll be going, yeah, get off my lawn. And the kids will be going, I don't know what you mean. Books,
yeah, LOL books.
Yeah, book,
LOL books.
Yeah, books are just whatever.
LOL books or whatever the kids will say at that point.
Yeah.
All right, hey, we've gone over. I rambled.
Oh, we have gone over. But it's always so much fun to talk.
It is. It is, but we should do it.
All right, I know how to make this thing wrap up quickly. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening, and feel free to follow me on Twitter or app.net. I'm Jay Gamut at both places.
And I'm TMO Brian on Twitter. That's Brian with a Y. That's the real Brian. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. That's all for this week.
Head on over to the iTunes store and rate our show for us, because it totally rocks and it lets us know what you like. Also, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.